Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hello, everybody. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, and this is another episode of the Jug Life Podcast, joined, as always, by... what is he today? This is a mischievous look. Mischievous Max Montana. Max, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well.
And our good friend. Yeah, one of our only friends at weightlifting meets at this point.
Pretty much the only one.
Yeah, at least.
Thick and thin.
Yeah, we'll see how this episode goes. Dan Brown of Lift Lab. How you doing, Dan?
I am doing well. I am honored and thrilled to be here. Last time, if you remember, I was booted off for Ed Cohen, who is reasonably a good fella.
Right. So he knifed me after that show.
He did.
He showed me how to kill me with a knife.
He's Southside Chicago guy. That's what you expect.
For sure.
He trains in knife fighting.
Yeah.
And loves to demonstrate it on people, not with actual knives, but like pens and
watch what I could do.
He also doesn't demonstrate at like 10% speed. It's like 45-50%, where like you're getting pushed around and a knife is coming at your face and. Yeah. He doesn't fuck around.
Yeah. Clearly, you guys have never drank on the south side of Chicago. I'll spend some time there. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
So we're here. You may notice our slightly more formal than normal.
We're just outside the Vanderbilt ballroom.
Yeah. Here at American Open 3 in Grand Rapids, the Grand Amway Hotel. There's 7 weddings going on in our immediate view, but we have a nice chandelier lighting us. I'm sure my eyes are sparkling even more than normal. So we want to talk to Dan today, though, because he runs one of the most successful weightlifting gyms in America, at Lift Lab. Tons of lifters. He's a very well-educated coach and a guy that we have a lot of respect for, and he's got some cool projects going on. So I guess let's kind of just get right into it. And tell us about the journey to become a weightlifting coach and athlete, education, all that stuff.
Sure. Not to bore the folks at home with all the details, I'm going to class this podcast down a little bit, with these Orange County guys, but from Hendricks County, Indiana. It's a pretty popular hotspot. Grew up like any other typical Midwestern kid, played all the sports, did all the things. Started off with the Sandfield weight set, which is pretty much the story of every single person that's ever become a strength and conditioning coach. So I'd love to say it's unique, but it's really not.
How many posters did you have in your room as a kid?
Well, I had zero, but that's only because my dad went to Indiana State and said, I hung out with Larry Bird. So I got to hear those possibly tall tales.
Yeah. How many Larry Bird posters do you have in your room as an adult?
6. 5 on the ceiling.
He's one of the... there's the HBO documentary, that... Courtship of Rivals, have you seen that one?
Don't mess with him.
He's the baddest dude ever.
So, I don't want to get this totally off the rails.
All his
we're headed there.
Stuff, though. He was more magic than magic.
Oh, he's insane. And he still works for the Pacers. I occasionally am in the good graces to go down there and hang out.
Oh.
And
have you met him?
The man, I have not personally met him. I have 2 friends that are in the strength and conditioning realm there. They have been invited to his office. And they tell me that man chain smokes like it's going out of style.
That's so awesome.
I didn't think people smoked anymore, but
I'm just glad that
apparently
he does.
Larry Bird does.
I'm glad that he does, because it just adds to his awesomeness.
You're right. I mean, he is the legend. Indiana, race cars and Larry Bird and Peyton Manning, that kind of sums that up. And basically played all the sports. I ended up going to the greatest university in the world, Purdue University. Put people on the moon, did some of that stuff. So
what is a Boilermaker?
Well, it's actually a train, but it's also a beer and a shot. You've probably tried one or two. It's a guy with a giant hammer, which is a strength guide. You can probably appreciate that.
A train. So a train is a mascot.
It's a train that will run over people.
What if I
and kill
off
them
the track stuff?
Well, you know, it's only going to play to its strengths.
Good at going off the tracks.
Yeah, the Boilermaker's just been defeated.
Oh, you got me there.
I haven't even thought of that.
But, you know, whatever. So anyway, I went up there. I did my undergrad. Nothing too spectacular. Did the typical college kid thing. You know, drank Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But I always maintained like a heavy training regimen, which I thought was probably you know, pretty impressive to get up on Friday morning and have what I called Powerhouse Friday, where we'd squat, bench, deadlift, do those sort of things. When I left my undergrad, I kind of messed up. I got married right out of college, which is
life sentence.
To the kids that are listening at home, don't do that. That lasted less than a year and a half, but my ex-wife was in medical school. It moved us up to Chicago, hence the Southside references. And there I worked in fitness purgatory for a Globo gym, if you will. And then shortly thereafter that, I went back to Purdue as a coach and as a graduate student. I did a master's degree, got into a PhD, and then all that dissertation. And that means I'm never going to finish. Like, now I think I'm not going to finish out of spite.
What was the PhD?
So I think you'll appreciate this, obviously, with the direction you guys have with your Strength History Minute, which are fabulous, by the way. Maybe I'm the only fan, but I love it.
Were you a Strength History PhD?
I was. So I was a PhD in pedagogy. That was the classification. Yeah. The emphasis was on history and philosophy of sport. So this doesn't exist too much.
The second sports history degree we've ever met. You're the second of the four.
I know, like, the University of Texas has a pretty solid one.
Ben Pollock was there.
Okay. And then, but
do you know him?
I do not.
You don't know the other half of your
five other people.
No. You're missing 20% of your industry.
Finish. Like, that's the point, right? I'm not networking well enough in the industry. But my advisor there at the time, it's pretty much gone away. It doesn't really exist. Because
that's odd. I would have thought that was here to stay forever, but
I just can't make any money once you get it. Huh. You know, it's believe it or not, it's not gonna pay the bills. To talk about
so odd
an implement that was lifted 7,500 years ago, 200 years ago, whatever.
Right.
So that PhD was it was a cross-cultural comparison of the U.S., China, and Eastern Europe during their prevalences of when they were prevalent in the Olympics, essentially. Okay. When they were winning shit.
Overall Olympics, all sports?
Yeah, I really dialed it in to weightlifting, but okay. I considered all sports. And I, it was
that
really,
include the Winter Olympics?
No, only summer. Hey, good eye, Max.
You know.
But that...
some people don't like Winter Olympics. You're on Juggernaut, though. We appreciate Winter Olympics as much as we appreciate the Summer Olympics, in case anyone's wondering.
We've got a lot of heat from our Norwegian fans about discounting the efforts of Russia to win in the Winter Olympics through Icarus. We're like, well, if you guys are going to do all that work, at least do it for the Summer Olympics so someone cares. The Winter Olympics are cool, too. But to the commenter who thought that biathlon athletes are more athletic than weightlifters, please, I can't even with you.
I'm impressed that they, cared enough to comment about defending the Winter Olympics. Like, that's a good sign to me.
There's been a lot of comments to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you can't, you know, by the time you frame up what's going on culturally in the U.S., Eastern Europe, really Russia and China, you can't in a timely manner write a dissertation that's going to get you out of there in this lifetime.
Right.
So, I mean, Max, you've written
12 pages.
That book you wrote, you know. So you know what it's like to sit down and write and it not go anywhere and
triple
space. Like
14.
I stretched it out to a solid 18 pages with an entire list of my favorite training music.
That is what that's what today's long form content has come to, unfortunately.
That's what
you get. Yeah.
So how do we go from never finishing the dissertation to Lift Lab?
Yeah, so to back up just a little bit, I didn't, we've grown this gym Center around Olympic weightlifting. When I was in high school, I didn't do Olympic weightlifting. We didn't snatch. We did cleans, okay? Like, we did, think the BFS program, right? We didn't box squat, but, you know, we did that stuff. When I really got into it right before I went to graduate school. In graduate school, I had my first boss at Purdue in the strength and conditioning department. He's a great guy, great mentor. We didn't have an Olympic weightlifting-based program, but I liked it. And so I was always asking him questions about, why don't we do this? Why are we not snatching? Why are we not cleaning? Basically just being a good intern, or not intern, being a good assistant and asking questions and trying to grow and develop my learning, but never violating what he wanted done within the program. And he was very good about, like, answering my questions, putting up my shit. And he was like, you know, I really think you should explore this Olympic weightlifting thing. So I did. And I kept doing that. And then when I had my first kid,
you guys do that ball, like,
right?
Somebody told me that today.
You're welcome.
First of all, I'm a foot taller, right? Oh, yeah. Way more handsome.
Both of those facts are debatable. How tall are you? Say at the same time. 2.5
Yeah, you're okay. We're the
I hunch a lot.
Yeah.
It's an insecurity thing.
Leaning over while you're coaching all these athletes. So I picked up the phone. I called some people that were already involved in weightlifting. They told me that starting a weightlifting gym was a horrible idea and that I would never make any money doing it. And I basically, and they were.
And you pulled up here in a Lamborghini, right?
I wouldn't slum two of a Lambo. Them. Come on. I'm better than that. My driver of my Bentley dropped me off. Okay.
Okay.
And so they basically said, yeah, you'll never do it. You'll never make it. Here's why. At the time, CrossFit was just kind of coming on the scene.
What year was this about?
This would have been
early
in,
2000s?
No, it was a little later than that. I think I left Purdue around 2010.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I decided, you know what, I'm not really making any money as a collegiate strength and conditioning coach. I had my firstborn while I was coaching at Purdue. The writing was on the wall that my job was going to be on the line every time around New Year's. We weren't winning a lot of football games.
Yeah.
And the kind of the reality of it was, you're going to make a decision here whether you pursue college strength and conditioning or kind of do your own thing. And so then decided to do my own thing, you know.
How did you actually set out setting up Lift Lab as a gym? Did you, like, first Lift Lab 1.0, what was that? What
so
that
was like? It's the first time I ever met Chad was actually out of a – I was training my first group of weightlifters out of the corner of this gym, and basically, like, the gym claimed to be, like, a sports performance place, but there wasn't a lot of that going on.
Right.
And so I started getting a little following of weightlifters. I branched off and started – my first gym with a partner, a guy I coached with at Purdue. That didn't go well just because neither one of us really understood what it took to run a business.
Yeah.
And then I started, like, actually putting on the business hat and going out, raising money, finding capital, and doing those sort of things. So Lift Lab that we see today is really probably the second version or maybe the third version.
Right.
And how big is the facility now? Because I see the videos, seen pictures. It looks like a phenomenal space.
It's really cool.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. The totality of the space is around 7,000 square feet. There are some other things in it. We have a full-time chiropractor. He has an office in there and some things like that. So it's a pretty pretty good-sized space, and it's, you know, right downtown Indianapolis, and we have, you know, the fortunate ability to reach a lot of people.
And how many competitive weightlifters? I know here at the AO3 this weekend you have 34 lifters.
Correct.
Which has got to be the most of any.
34?
I needed the max. I ate a clipboard. I'm telling you.
It's got to be the most of any club.
I've never heard anyone that many.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's you kind of got to take it with a grain of salt, right? So just talking about the overall philosophy of Lift Lab, like, we want to grow the culture of strength and conditioning. If you go back to, like, the background, the history and philosophy of sport, like, I like a lot of the cultural things that happen about it. So we weren't going out and, like, picking top talent to come to us. One, we didn't have that kind of pull. Like, you guys have that kind of pull, you know, that kind of social media presence.
Your coaches are really good looking.
When you got the second best looking man in USA weightlifting running your gym, you can just get
second best.
You're first.
Phil, then me.
Right. So, we have brought in, you know, athletes of all levels, develop the ones that we can. Our goal is still to produce top talent, but from our setup and our model, you got to put a lot of athletes in to get the ones that are going to kind of come out in the top. And we're getting that now, but that's after 3 years of just taking people and developing them and bringing them along. Competitive wise, we have 34 here. We probably left another six at home that were actually more competitive. They just need a little bit of time off. In a rest. So the athletes we brought here are people that were going to experience like the first kind of, you know, national type stage as they just try to take the steps in weightlifting.
That's cool.
Overall, 40 AO series level lifters, we have like 150.
Yeah. I'd say it's probably somewhere around there. So
150 people who are competing at local meets and
and having fun and doing
that's
the
excellent.
Things.
I mean, I can't think of another club that's really in one gym that has 50 people who are doing
hassle-free is probably the only one.
I mean, that's two different places.
No, it's just the one now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I mean, that's different because he's in high school.
Yeah.
Anybody that takes gym class becomes a USAW member. So.
Now, I'm still looking for that setup, trying to feed it in.
Yeah.
But
that's really cool.
So that's been the start of it.
You kind of mentioned that your sort of strategy or maybe your philosophy is kind of built around the idea of like bringing the numbers in and then sort of sifting through as the talent rises to the top. Can you like elaborate on that a little
more? Yeah, sure. So it's like a lot of that goes back to like I love Purdue, but we did not recruit top talent. Like we didn't get 4-star, 5-star athletes. So that like a really important time in my coaching life was when I was there, and I learned a lot about the process to take somebody that, you know, is a 1-star recruit or a 0-star recruit and try to bring them along. I just tried to carry that over to weightlifting. So, okay, we're going to get whoever we get.
Right.
All right. And then we're going to put a system in play and we're going to walk them through these levels, which is what we have with levels program, and show them the path. Like if you do this and this and this and this, you can be, you know, start contending for a national championship, maybe an international team and things like that.
At some point, and that's like the program is level 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
At some point above that, do you have more individualized programs for those people? Or how do you approach that?
Sure. Once they hit, there's just 4 levels technically. There's a level 0. So level 0 is like, hey, I've come into the gym. I've never touched a weight, never touched a bar, never done a snatch, never done a clean and jerk. The first 16 weeks are just that.
Right.
You do that and you try to get reasonably strong. By the time they get to level 3, they're doing customized individual program.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
Yeah, that's that.
So as you're looking at the growth of Lift Lab and you're getting ready to open your second location now, and there's a lot of people listening and watching who I'm sure it's their dream to open a gym.
For sure.
And maybe people are telling them the same thing that people told you, it's not going to work. Or they're thinking to themselves like, yeah, I'd love to do that, but I don't think it's going to work. You know, if you can pick out a couple as gym owner, the business side of things, because I'm sure, as you found out in that early part, and I did too,
right,
running a gym isn't about running a gym.
No, 100%.
It's about the business of running a gym. What are some of the, you know, you think your big pieces of advice in that regard?
So we all get into this profession because we want to help people, we want to make these badass athletes, we want to get them strong. But at the end of the day, we're running businesses, right? So the first thing you have to understand is it's not just hanging out with your buddies and lifting weights. It's running a business, okay? So you need to take some steps to learn what it takes to run a business, whether that's like you work at, you know, your dad owned a video store porn shop thing in the back
or combo
something like that, right? So you had to learn something about, you know, how to get people to do a 2-for-1. Just the movie side of it, right? But like, just to get, it doesn't matter what industry, just start understanding the process of like marketing and identifying who you're trying to sell to and take them a message and try to get them on board with what you're doing. That would be step number one. Step number two is a lot of people just tell you not to do shit because they couldn't do it and be successful, or they're like afraid to take a chance or a risk. The great thing for me is I grew up poor, and there was no really way to get more broke. Okay, so it's kind of just like, you can have nothing or you can still have nothing, right? So there was risk reward. I got debt financed and I had to sign my life away, but it was a risk I was willing to take. I was like, I'm a young man. If it goes totally bad, like, I'll recover. And you can't let people tell you, like, people are always going to try to poke holes in what you're doing. They're always going to tell you maybe you're not good enough, maybe you're not smart enough, maybe you're not good looking enough to be a weightlifting coach. whatever it may be, you got to work with the tools you got, and you just got to go.
Right. You make the most of what you have.
Absolutely. Like, thank God this is a podcast, because, you know, I've got this face for radio.
It's on video, too.
Oh, it's okay. Video. Those are the cameras.
Right, there's
there.
A lot of deformities. That would make sense.
Not why, just wedding photography.
Why they're there. So, you know, I would tell people, like, ultimately just, at some point, you have to tell people, fuck off, right? And if there are negative influences on you and your business and your gym, you're just going to have to kind of separate that and keep moving forward on your own path.
Well, and that...
We only have two mics. We could only afford two. that whole idea of being willing to take that risk is something I've talked about a bunch, and not much for the rah-rah motivational stuff, but that is one area that I think people need to, you know, whether it's just nut up and do it, I'll say that they have to have the courage to be great.
Sure.
Yeah, you got to be willing to take the risk, the big risk, which means the big risk of failure. But without the big risk of failure, there's no big risk of success. You know, if you always just bet on the safe ones, you might win a dollar here and there. But those who are willing to take the big risks that are going to have really successful, great gyms like you have going on.
That's true.
I couldn't agree with that more. I think that, like, the last piece of advice I'd probably give is going to be so simple, but just don't be an asshole, right? If you want to build something big. You know, there's two ways to have the biggest building in the city. You can either tear all the other buildings down, or you can just build your building a little higher. And when I started Lift Lab, my goal was, and I've stated this so many times publicly to our local community, my goal is to grow the sport of weightlifting in Indianapolis. That doesn't mean that I can coach all the weightlifters, right? And there's, like, a lot of pittiness and a lot of, like, other than butthurt, like, I really don't know how to call it, where, like, you see somebody else getting something, you're like, those guys are dicks, those guys are assholes, right? And it's like, no, I can sit back and, like, I can respect what you guys have done for weightlifting. It's a totally different approach.
That's what I'm thinking about is how much of a dick he is right now.
But I don't think that.
It's kind of a rising tides lift all ships mentality,
100%, right? Yeah. And so, like, you guys, if, let's say, for example, like, we build, like, some good lifters locally, right? And we do a really good job, and we move them up the ladder, okay? And then all of a sudden, they're like, you know what? I need to get out of Indianapolis. I need to get support.
Right. Greatest city ever.
Second greatest, maybe, to California. And it's like, I need to get out of Indianapolis. I need to go train somewhere. I need some support. And you guys have built the structure to help, like, the elite become more elite, and maybe Max gives them, you know, the elite coaching that they need. That's a win for me, right? Yeah. That's still a win for me. And, you know, it's...
But you guys look so much the same, and you're taller than him. That means that you're better, I think. There's more.
That's actually a wives' tale. That the height of a man determines his worth.
I'm almost confused looking back and forth.
Yeah, you know.
Did you ever used to wear glasses?
I got them a year ago. They're fake. I wanted to be like Max.
Right after you came to visit us a year ago.
Almost exactly. My kid went in for an eye appointment, and I realized I couldn't see this shit. And this is how competitive I am, okay? So they show me the lines, okay? I memorize them real quick. They put the things over my eyes. They asked me to read them back, and I just memorized them. And I said, ma'am, I got to confess something here. I just memorized it, and they were like, are you kidding? And I read it again. And
it's for your own good, sir. Do you realize that?
No,
it's for your own good.
It was not my own good.
So speaking of when you...
This girl sent me this picture today, and she took a picture of us, and Max in the background staring creepily at me, I might add. And she's like, I didn't realize you and Max were the same person.
Wow, look at that, huh?
That's disconcerting.
That's amazing.
So, but 1 year ago, maybe a little bit more now, you came to visit us under the guise of making this movie. It was actually to steal Max's identity. But,
I see. Very good job.
Never got that social security number.
So you're working on this movie project. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the movie really was... It started as a documentary just to show kind of some of the changes that were going on within USA Weightlifting, if you can think back a little bit. I was making the prediction to the producers and things like that, that the face and the growth of USA Weightlifting was about to drastically change. Prior to the OTC closing, mm-hmm. I predicted that the OTC would close and that the training essentially would go and be like places like Juggernaut, Lift Lab, whatever. It would go, what's the word I'm looking for?
Privatized,
or when they just call it like decentralized.
Yes.
Decentralized, right? And I was basically making the statement that the IOC, USA Weightlifting, they're no longer going to be in the business, the USOC, sorry, are no longer going to be in the business of developing athletes. I mean, you can just see like the programs getting slashed and slashed and slashed. So what the aim of that was to capture like all the changes that were going on and kind of talk about what the future of USA Weightlifting was going to be. There was a lot of I don't know if we have weightlifting pundits, but there was a lot of people, maybe old crotchety people, that were saying, like, you know, this thing's going to go off the cliff and burn because people aren't under one roof getting coached, and we have seen the ass opposite of that. I mean, if you look out there this weekend, the junior youth records just smashed left and right. Like, so it was really cool, and I was taking a very positive spin on the future of weightlifting in the U.S., which is maybe different than some of the things that have been put out there.
Yeah.
And how's kind of the progress on this been doing?
Yeah, it's definitely been a learning experience for me. I'm a, you know, as you can imagine, owning my own business, I'm kind of a control guy. And this is out of my hands because it's up to the production company. And they're LA people. They're surfing all day and eating avocados. So I'm not sure they're working very much.
Well, that's a 40-hour job.
Right. When we visited you, we went to the beach on like a Thursday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
It's packed.
It was packed.
Yeah.
It's like, I was expecting nobody to be here.
That's the weekend, Thursday through Wednesday night.
Right. I missed it. So the time frame on it is a TBD, but they are still actively pursuing things with it, doing things with it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So kind of put you guys in a...
Do you feel like some of your predictions are still coming true, or do you feel like, I guess, the decentralized thing was kind of interesting to us when it happened? How do you feel you've seen that kind of, I guess, manifest itself now, a year and a half later?
Like, if I see it as a good thing, or...
Yeah, or just, or in general, what things you've seen that are maybe different than you expected, or the same, or... Any other oddities, I guess?
I think to some degree, some of it's been more successful than I even anticipated, and not to like just pump your guys' heads up or anything, but it was going to be hard for me to believe that somebody could make a world team with a remote coach.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And Alyssa Ritchie has like done it really, really well.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I figured out yet if that's because she was already developed to like a certain level where she could handle like really being engaged and ingrained in the process and like making a daily concerted effort to focus in training. And you guys know she probably is, right?
Yeah.
So that was one thing I think was kind of a pleasant surprise. I thought people would have to physically, you know, kind of have smaller clubs and teams of elite, right? So maybe like Jug would have, you know, 15, 20 lifters, and such and such a gym would have some and whatever. So, you know, that's been one thing that has been a nice surprise for sure.
That's cool. Yeah. That's very cool. It's neat to hear because I think Alyssa is a very unique case, but at the same time, like, you know, Kiana is also verging on that same level, but I was actually surprised by that too, thinking like the old thought of like, oh, you've got to be like, you know, the coach who comes in and sits on the chair all day and, you know, burns her life away coaching one person in the dark and then,
just miserable,
you know, here it is.
That's right.
But,
and I think that
it's like, very cool
to have some perspective on it. They, if you really think about like how people learn, you need time to work on things, right? Like, I think it's great that you just started jiu-jitsu, right? Now, that's a whole different animal, but your coach is going to teach you some really repetitive stuff. And they could tell you 100 times in a training session, Chad, you need to get to your hip and shrimp away, right? It's going to take you just messing with it for a while to actually feel what that's like. I think weightlifting is the same thing. Like, sometimes we can just burden the athletes.
Right.
Like we talk about the amateur coaches that come to these things, like, are just coaching the shit out of the athletes in the warm-up room before a national meet. Take a step back. You'll see it with some pretty, like...
Top-level people, yeah.
Yeah, it's like...
I was going to mention that to you earlier, but I...
Yeah, you saw
were in the middle of doing it, and I felt awkward pointing out in front of the guy, but...
It just... Next time... Just
he's doing a bad job as your coach. But good luck.
Check out training on JTS.com. See if we can help you out with that.
I remember the website. Keep fucking it up.
If Max could remember the website, he would have told you.
JuggernautCoaching.com.
Right. Boom.
Right. Done.
Thank you, Max. Drops.
Yeah. Out of here.
Yeah, if you're training at Lift Lab and you can just transfer your membership over there, that'd be great.
A $12 discount.
They'd appreciate that.
Give you a $6 kickback on that.
I'm in.
This we'll just do a little round robin here. We're going to circle.
Seems good.
We are in the Amway Grand Plaza, so I think that's only fitting.
There are so many jokes to be coming out of this place.
Oh, yeah.
I can't. Anyway.
Actually, if you tell three of those jokes to three of your friends and then come back to me.
I've tried to sell toilet paper to the people at the front desk I don't know how many times. And they're good sports about it, and I'm sure they get it all the time.
But yeah, where can people learn more about you and Lift Lab?
They can check us out on the Instagrams, which is just Lift Lab Co. Face pages, same thing. You can always go to liftlabco.com. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, guys. It's been fun.
You can find me, Max_Ada, on Instagram or on Facebook. You can email me, max@jtsstrength.com. Or if you have any interest in the online programming, go to juggernautcoaching.com.
Look at this guy. Remembering the own website
I'm
that pays his bills.
I'm probably going to die in about 3 minutes. Life's complete.
I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram. Filling up your newsfeed all day. If you enjoy the podcast, please go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star review, subscribe to the YouTube. Always proud of the content we're producing here. Beyond that, check out the events section at store.jtsstrength.com for upcoming seminars with Max and myself all over the country, even all over the world. I'll actually be in Ireland in November, though you can't sign up for those through there, but you can ask me a question about it. So thanks for watching, and we will see you next Tuesday with a new episode of the Jug Life Podcast. Thank you. Thanks, Dan.